Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working in...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Good afternoon, everyone. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, True Straight Up, on this wonderful day in which they've announced that Bill and Melinda Gates are getting divorced.
So Chuck's going to dump me. No, or maybe I'll dump you.
No, you dump me.
I'm
sure both of them will go on to make two other people miserable as they are.
Hey, and good afternoon to Dr. Donna. Good afternoon to everyone joining us on Zoom and everybody listening too. Hey, the show today brought to you by AmericasCitizenPress.com, a great conservative website. Also, Denver Synergenics and Dr. Julie McCallan. I'm Robert Spencer coming up in a second to talk about what the heck is the Biden administration and John Kerry doing cozying up to our enemies. And then also Matt Arnold with Campaign Integrity Watchdog at the bottom of the hour with an update on the whole Tay Anderson thing. You will be shocked to hear that the Colorado Secretary of State, a very partisan Democrat, might be playing politics with some decisions.
She wouldn't do that.
She would never do that.
She consulted with Planned Parenthood before responding.
Right, exactly. And we're lucky here in Colorado. Governor Paula says we don't have to wear a mask indoors as long as 80% of the people, wherever it is that we are vaccinated, although, and if we're in the right county. So no clear guidance on how we're supposed to figure that out. No
just
clear
count. Just say, well, are you a vaccine? Yes. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, what?
Out of 12. No, that's no good.
That's right. Although they did say kids 10 and under don't have to. So I'm going to say I'm a youthful. I mean, it's just ridiculous. We'll talk about that too. Hey, but we're pleased to have with us Robert Spencer from a Jihad Watch with us. We contacted him last week because, you know, Chuck and I were talking like, what's the deal with Iran and the Biden administration? So Robert.
With Biden and the entire Middle East.
Exactly. So Robert, thank you for your time. So glad to have you on.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's go one at a time. Let's start what he's doing to Turkey. So he's decided that he'll officially declare the million plus Armenians that were killed genocide, as opposed to just old-fashioned killings.
And this was when?
During World War One, at the end of World War One. And they killed a million Greeks too. But we don't, you know, the Greeks don't have quite as much power. And it's always amazing that how many people of Armenian descent, including, I believe you are, Robert, aren't you?
Actually Greek, but yes, you're close.
Okay. So what's the deal? I mean, it has been since 1918. And I know Joe Biden issues an executive order every 5 minutes that had been written up by a progressive, you know, Generation Z staffer over there. But what's the deal with...
What does he gain by annoying Turkey offhand?
What he gains is appeasing Iran yet again. He did the right thing for the wrong reason. Every president should be acknowledging the Armenian genocide, the Greek genocide, the Assyrian genocide. And it's a terrible thing that they're playing politics to the extent that they wouldn't. But Biden's only done it now because in doing so, he has now completed the embarrassment of the chief rivals of Iran in the Islamic world. And those are primarily Saudi Arabia and Turkey. Saudi Arabia, he embarrassed by releasing the intelligence report that showed that the crown prince was involved with the murder of Khashoggi. Now, the thing is, it's a terrible thing that this journalist or Muslim Brotherhood operative, actually he was both, was murdered. But you're not going to find anybody with clean hands in the Islamic world. It's authoritarian regime after authoritarian regime. To single out the Saudis like that is obviously just playing politics, trying to weaken the Saudis vis-a-vis Iran. It's the same thing with the Armenian genocide. Now it weakens and embarrasses Turkey in the face of Iran as well, after Turkey and Iran faced off in a proxy war between Armenia and Azerbaijan last fall.
When I was kind of getting ready for the show, I was sort of Googling images to put up on our Facebook page. You know, I just said anti-American protests, Iran images, and like a million come up, like almost literally, right? It's not like, why, why is John Kerry, you know, back when he was Secretary of State, leaking information about Israeli operations, our ally, to Iran, our enemy? Why is now apparently Biden sending more plane loads and pallets of dollars over there, too? What's the deal? Iran's our enemy. Even I get that, right? And they chant death to America, stuff like that. Why?
No, they're just kidding, Julie.
They're just kidding.
Showing affection. They really love us.
Why is Biden going out of his way to do all of this?
Well, for one thing, it's saving face, because the experts were defeated by the upstart in 2016, and the entrenched foreign policy establishment was shown up that after 40, 50 years of failed approaches, failed peace deals, nothing to show for all their expert analysis, the experts gave way for 4 years to a group of people they had utter contempt for, and they thought were amateurs who were going to make a mess of it, and they concluded peace agreements in the Middle East. And so now the foreign policy establishment is absolutely enraged, and they have to reassert that they were right all along by reasserting the cornerstone of the Obama administration's foreign policy, which was this appeasement of Iran.
Well, didn't Kerry, I think I remember a news clip saying, you'll never separately make peace with individual Arab Middle East countries. It's just not going to happen.
Unless, of course, he asked.
Never happened. Yeah, he said that. So, see, he has egg on his face because Trump did it. And so now he has to prove that he was right all along. And since he doesn't have any imagination and just keeps making the same mistakes over and over again, he's in the process of doing it again.
So you're saying our foreign policy right now is being dictated not by actually any kind of foreign policy, but by the ego and juvenile toddler id of some of the people who have been put in charge of our foreign policy? That's sort of the basis of decisions that are being made now?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Trump repudiated the Iran deal, and so these people, because they hate Trump and they have to show that he was wrong, are reapplying the Iran deal.
Wow. What's going to happen then? I have to imagine.
The Israelis blew up some centrifuges and delayed them a little bit, I assume.
Well, the Israelis are increasingly going to have to go it alone, because we're simply not going to be helping them. This is a clear betrayal of an ally. Kerry has made that clear by giving secrets to the Iranians. And so I think the Israelis know this, and this is why they have been engaging in actions like this, the recent strange occurrences at the Natanz nuclear plant that took it out of action for a considerable period. They're doing all that because they understand that Joe Biden is in the process of giving away the store, and they don't want to lie down and go gently into the night.
Why the emphasis on appeasing Iran in the first place? I guess I understand what you're saying, and tragically it makes sense that they just do it just because they hate Donald Trump more than they hate enemies of the country. Why are we so worried about appeasing Iran out of all the stuff going on?
Well, I think that it started in the Obama administration because they thought that Iran would be a rock of stability in the Middle East. That once with Saddam Hussein removed, and Saddam Hussein was a scoundrel, but he did create a certain stability in the heart of the Islamic world. They figured that Iran could step up and take the place of Iraq in that regard. They didn't have, in that sense, any understanding of the deep hatred between Sunni and Shiite Muslims, and they didn't have any understanding of how much Iran was hated and feared by many areas, many other countries in the Islamic world. And they thought that it would create a peaceful situation. This is totally based on paper analysis and not on any actual facts on the ground.
Well, that's because, have you seen the CIA recruiting video? That's because they have cisgender millennials suffering from general anxiety disorder now running the place. It's insanity.
Yeah. Yeah, their concerns are elsewhere. And they've been notorious for this for decades. Back in 1979, when Khomeini took power and the Islamic Republic of Iran was instituted, nobody in the State Department had read any books that Khomeini had written or knew anything about him beyond what had been reported in places like Time magazine. And this was the central intelligence agency, the central information gathering apparatuses of the United States, the core of our foreign policy decision-making team, and they didn't know anything about what this guy was all about.
Right. Well, that's, they got to raid Giuliani's apartment.
Who in your mind is worse, the alphabet ones? Is the CIA worse than the FBI, or the FBI worse than the CIA? I mean, they seem to be competing.
It's a little bit hard to tell because the FBI is more public, and we don't really know what the CIA is doing. And also, there's so much weird conspiracy theory stuff out there about what the CIA is doing, and I certainly don't want to endorse any of that. But I do get the impression, and I think that there are a lot of very solid people who have the impression that the CIA is wholly compromised, working for internationalist interests, and that they are more of the problem. They are the ones who are calling the shots here, and the FBI is falling in line.
This is from Mark here, one of our callers, our listeners, as a comment. John Kerry only makes deals with people that pay his family megabucks, along with the Biden family and Romney family, too. That's probably true. We're talking with Robert Spencer from Jihad Watch. What happens with all of this? I mean,
what happens in the next 5 years?
Well, probably Iran is going to get a nuclear weapon and try to destroy Israel.
Thank God they've shown Trump. Huh? Yeah. Thank God John Kerry showed Trump how wrong he was on that.
Thing we don't have mean tweets.
Well, expand on that, actually, because that's a pretty awful thing, right? You would think that they would want to build on some of the success that Donald Trump had instead of, because the odds are, I mean, the stakes are high. We're not talking like, you know, we aren't going to be invited to a state dinner or something like that. We're talking about, in your opinion, they're going to get a nuclear weapon and try to nuke Israel. I mean, that's pretty scary.
Yeah, and it's the Israelis who are going to stop it if anybody's going to stop it. It's not going to be the United States. And this could be absolutely transformative for the global situation if this comes to pass. And it could really spell the end of America as a significant global power. I certainly hope none of this takes place, but that seems to me to be the road that we're traveling on right now.
Well, it doesn't seem like we're doing anything to try to stop Iran. I mean, apparently we're giving them more money, which
of course, quick $7 billion because we just printed anyway. I mean,
we're giving them huge amounts of money, and they were shown to have taken the money Obama gave them and used it to finance jihad terrorism around the world, Hezbollah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, leftist groups around the world as well, a leftist political party in Spain. They are actively working for the destabilization of governments in the West, which they then hope to exploit for their own purposes, and the American taxpayers are going to be paying for it again like we did before.
So it's like our tax dollars are going to be used to nuke Israel, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's good.
That very well could happen.
And I've never quite figured out what the fascination of the Jewish American population for left-wing politics like Biden when he's going to go and help finance the obliteration of Israel, but maybe that's beyond understanding.
Yeah, it's a lot of it as a cultural thing that you have the Democratic Party having been historically identified with caring for the downtrodden, the marginalized, and that's been something that the Jewish people have been committed to doing, to helping the marginalized and the poor as a people for millennia. And so it was natural that they would ally, but they ought to be able to see through the rhetoric at this point and realize how hollow it is.
Well, and looking at our major cities, which have been under Democratic control, about how much they're helping the marginalized and the poor, helping them shoot each other, I guess.
Right. What about in terms of sort of just the Mideast in general then? I mean, if you're Saudi Arabia, if you're some of these other countries besides just Iran and Israel.
Well, one of the countries that made a peace agreement with Israel.
Right.
Where do you know?
What is this happening? Do you need to start building your own nuclear weapon too? Because to me, this sort of says to them, hey, look, policy has nothing to do with policy anymore here. It's all about the egos of the people who are signing the deals right now.
Well, yeah, but, you know, paradoxically, those countries that have concluded deals with Israel and some others as well may end up strengthening those connections with Israel, because you're talking about Bahrain, which the Iranians consider to be the 15th province of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The United Arab Emirates is directly threatened by Iran as well. There are other countries that are directly threatened by Iran. They see Israel as a significant force against Iran. And so it may well end up making for even a greater expansion of the process that Trump got going.
And how does Turkey figure in these days? Who are they for? Who are they against? Who are they trying to screw up?
Well, you know, Turkey recently, as I mentioned before, fought a proxy war in Azerbaijan. Azerbaijan and Armenia were fighting over some disputed territory, and the Turks energetically aided the Azeris while the Iranians aided Armenia. And so it ended up being kind of a shadow war between Turkey and Iran. And Turkey wants to be the Islamic, the leader of the Islamic world, reassert the Ottoman Caliphate, and that would put it at direct odds with Iran, which also wants to lead the Islamic world, is hamstrung a little bit by being Shiite, but is not letting that stop it from trying.
Was Armenia still Christian, or is that a Islamic
part? Armenian is still Christian, and Azerbaijan is Muslim, but the Iranians were playing real politics. They think that Azerbaijan is a significant threat to them, and they wanted to neutralize it a little bit by strengthening Armenia against the Azeris.
Where does, when we go back to what's going on between Iran and, as you said, and I think it can't be emphasized enough, that where you see this potentially, not more than potentially, but very possibly leading to, is Iran developing a nuclear weapon and using it against Israel. How does China play into all of this?
Well, China, of course, is loving this because it sees it as all a function of the weakening of American global power, which it is. And China has just actually concluded some agreements with Iran, and they don't, as far as I know, have that kind of close relationship with Israel. Probably they wouldn't care if Iran made that move altogether.
Now, what is in terms of Saudi Arabia or some of the other countries there? Does China care about them, or they just sort of care about fomenting chaos and war and things like that over there?
Yeah, very much fomenting chaos. And it does seem as if the closest relationship that they have in the Islamic world right now is with Iran.
Wow.
Well, is Israel going to get a stable government one of these elections?
Oh, I doubt it, but it still should be able to defend itself either way. The Israelis are very determined in that regard. I think the recent actions we've seen in Iran at the Natanz nuclear plant and elsewhere show that. And so I don't know that it's a life and death situation with the Israeli elections. Of course, the Israeli left is just as suicidal and short-sighted as the American left. And so it would be very dangerous if they were to gain complete power. But I think that's unlikely. I hope that's unlikely.
What about in terms of threats to the United States, either terrorist or sort of direct? I mean, it seems to me that if Iran has nuclear weapons, then it's not very, yes, Israel's close, but nuclear weapons can be moved and flown places or put on ships with the aid of places like China. I mean, have I been watching too many, science fiction movies, or is there a real threat if that happens?
Oh, yeah, sure, there's a threat. This could happen. The Iranians, for years have said death to America is not just a slogan, it's a program. It is a policy that we are following out. I explain all this with quite a lot of documentation from Iranian leaders in a book I wrote a few years ago, The Complete Infidel's Guide to Iran. And it shows in all the quotes that I've got in there show that the Iranians are pursuing a course that will lead them to war with the United States. The only thing that could keep Iran from going to war with the United States eventually is if the Islamic Republic falls, or if the United States does something so that war is unnecessary.
Like Joe Biden? So we just send them money?
Do you have a feeling of who in the Biden administration actually makes their foreign policy decisions?
Well, I don't know who does, but I don't think it's Biden. I don't think Biden is making any of the decisions.
How would you characterize? I mean, you know, it seems like Biden is just, again, you know, you hit it on the head there. I think their overwhelming guiding light policy-wise seems to be to hate Trump in all things. And if Trump said yes, then they're going to say no or vice versa. I mean, how would you rate and maybe talk a little bit about how he's doing and what's happening foreign policy-wise really quickly, I think rapidly, under this first 100 days of Joe Biden?
Yeah, whoever is running things is doing it pretty quickly. And the magnitude of the catastrophe, I think, is going to be reverberating for quite a few years to come. But it's clear that whoever is in charge is a socialist internationalist or a group of socialist internationalists who don't want America's interests to be put first, don't care about the welfare of American citizens, and don't even probably believe in nation states and think that America, as the most formidable nation state in the world, first off, needs to be dissolved. And so we're much more vulnerable just in the last few months to jihad terror attacks, to an inundation of criminal activity from criminal migrants, and more.
What about how much of this is do you think Obama's people? You know, you read stuff sometimes, particularly in conservative media, that say all of this is just sort of an acceleration of the Obama administration and Obama's plans. Do you see it that way, or is this something different, or maybe a combination of both?
Well, I think it's very much Obama's third term, and Obama may be the one running things to a considerable degree. You remember that video a few years back? When he was still president, they said, would you, if you could, run for a third term? And he said, oh, yeah. And the ideal situation would be to find somebody who would let me run things through him and essentially be a puppet. I mean, there's a video with Obama saying this. And if anybody's suited for the puppet role, it's Joe Biden. I'm just not sure that Obama himself is not being run by somebody else.
Oh, no. What do you mean by that? That's intriguing, because I kind of think that, too. But what do you mean?
Well, I got the impression when he was president that he was playing golf a lot, that he was not really all that deeply engaged in what he was doing, that he was a handsome, articulate front man, but that was about all he was, and that other people were making policy. A lot of the same people, of course, who were in his administration are in the Biden administration, and I don't really know who it all goes back to. You know, a lot of people say George Soros, and that might be it. I don't really know, but I do think that there is a very clear agenda being pursued here, and I never got the impression that Barack Obama had enough of a work ethic or that Joe Biden has enough of an intellect to carry it through. So I suspect that somebody else is doing it.
Now, do you see that tying in with all of a sudden we're seeing these woke corporations, right? I mean, I have a theory that it's just basically global corporations want to take over the world. And sooner or later, you know, China's willing to let them help as long as it helps China's interests and everything is intermeshed there. But I mean, so you've got these woke corporations, you've got
woke CIA,
you've got social media, you know, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, openly and increasingly censoring things. Does it all tie together, do you think? Or have I been watching too many spy movies?
No, I don't think you need a conspiracy theory. You know, it's just you're talking about a lot of people. You named a lot of people just then who have the same interests. And when their interests coalesce, why shouldn't they work together? All they have to have is a couple of phone calls. All they have to have is maybe, you know, one Zoom meeting and they discuss the kinds of things they're going to pursue, and then they all pursue them in their different ways. They have the same worldview, the same goals, the same perspectives, the same priorities. So it doesn't have to be some crazy secret conspiracy. It's pretty much out in the open that they're all directed in the same way, and so why not?
Well, and you're right, they did. They had somebody had that story about all the CEOs having their giant Zoom meeting where essentially they decided to be more woke. So,
do you think whoever's running things will ever be exposed, or will be always in the dark?
I sure hope so. I guess it depends on who wins ultimately in the end. And if they do succeed in destroying America as a free society, setting up an authoritarian woke nanny state, then that I know, don't think we'll ever know. But if free people prevail, if the American free system prevails, then maybe it will all come out. I sure hope so.
Yeah, you know, this is from Charlene. She's touching us here. The shadow government, and this is true, the shadow government has been around a long time. A communist infiltration of corporations and institutions, ruling elite control through the ages. And then Sandra says, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Well, so do you, let me just a couple final questions, Robert, and with Robert Spencer with Jihad Watch. Where do you see, I mean, so we've been talking about Iran, we've been talking about Israel. Where do you see things going sort of foreign policy-wise then with the Biden administration?
It's just going to get worse. You can take, for example, the fact that there were cooler heads in his administration who were going to keep in place some of Trump's immigration restrictions until the woke leftists overwhelmed them and insisted that all the immigration restrictions had to be removed. So what are we going to see? We're going to see a whole lot of criminals come in, jihad terrorists come in, innocent people being killed, and nothing will be done in response because it's all systemic racism or whatever. And so we'll just get more of the same, and the situation will continue to deteriorate.
What do you think communist China or Iran or Russia or somebody else is going to put Biden to the test of resolve in the near future?
Yeah, Russia might. It's incredibly stupid. It's insanely stupid what Biden's people are doing with Russia and, you know, putting increasing troop numbers in Norway and Germany as if there really were some military threat from Russia. Nowadays, you know, I remember Barack Obama saying to Romney, the 80s called and want their foreign policy back. And that was when Romney was talking 9 years ago about a Russia threat. Russia is a competitor, but it doesn't show any of the signs of being a military threat to the United States the way Iran does or China does, for that matter, in many ways, with the possible invasion of Taiwan and so on. And so he might end up getting us into a war with Russia because of all these paranoid fictions about Russia throwing the 2016 election and all the resulting hysteria that is based on absolutely nothing. And millions of people could end up getting killed because of democratic election strategies.
Well, this is a question, this is our final question, but it's one I've always have to ask all my guests these days, or our guests these days. What's some good news out there?
Well, I think one of the best news is that there is the audit going on in Arizona, that it seems to be continuing. I still won't believe that it's going to get completed in an honest fashion until I see it. But if it shows that there was widespread election fraud, then maybe there will be similar audits in other states. I'm not saying that it'll change anything because there's no apparatus in the U.S. Constitution for doing such a thing. But if it's proven that the election was stolen, that's going to change a lot anyway.
Hopefully.
All right. Well,
where can people get your books and find out more about you?
I'm at jihadwatch.org, at jihadwatchrs on Twitter. The books are at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and at any good bookstore if you ask them to order them.
All right. I really appreciate you coming on. You're insightful as always. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, Robert Spencer there, jihadwatch.org. He's just great. We've been having him in our show forever. Although that's the most alarming thing I've ever heard him say, that he worries that Iran is going to develop a nuclear. But, of course, that's what they're doing, right? And that's why Trump moved in, said, look, we can't be having Iran have nuclear weapons. It's bad, bad, bad. Biden says, we don't care. If Trump said no nuclear weapons, we say lots of nuclear weapons for everybody.
I like this. At least he said the left in Israel is every bit as suicidal as the left in the United States. It's good to know. There are other places in the world where everybody wants to destroy their only country they have, because that's the only reason I can figure where Biden and Obama and everything comes.
And here's from Charlene. We may have to hope for a former communist state to save us. Russia kicked the globalists out. So that's why the cabal hates them without any obvious rationale. Yeah, that'd be something, right? If all of a sudden the Republicans are joining with the Russians. We're hoping to get Matt Arnold coming on here in a second. I haven't seen him in on Zoom yet. Matt, if you're on Zoom, go ahead and pop in. If not, I want to talk real briefly, though, a little until he gets here, because I think, again, the insanity of all of this whole vaccine thing. And I think, I'm hopeful, this is some good news, Chuck. I think it's starting to unravel a little bit, right? Because people, not just Republicans, are now saying, well, wait a minute, So, like when Cuomo today said that kids under 16 need to get vaccinated, right?
Yeah, did he?
Yeah, he said that because, and if you don't, well, what happens if you go home and maybe your grandma's been vaccinated, but you aren't, and you go home and you kiss her, you could kill her. He literally said that you could kill
her. But she's vaccinated.
Well, exactly. That's what people are pointing out. Well, wait a minute.
You can't kill her.
You can't kill her because she's
maybe,
been vaccinated.
And she can't kill you because here she's vaccinated. So, who? The only person who gets you killed is to go in one of his nursing homes.
Exactly, it's Cuomo himself.
Yeah.
But I think though it's starting, and because people are starting to say that. It's like, well, wait a minute. If you're vaccinated, number one, when all these people, they're trying to force the vaccine people to turn into new Karens, right? Into mean girl Karens, and force people who have the vaccine to look at the rest of us and say, it's your fault that it can't do this. But the point is, if you've already been vaccinated, it shouldn't matter to you at all whether I've been vaccinated or not because
right.
you're immune.
Right.
And then it goes back to, and if you're not immune, then why should you get vaccinated? So they have their weird, circular, illogical logic
and
that they're trying to...
Some official in the CDC said, I don't think we'll ever get the herd immunity.
Right.
Which means that we'll never get anything, and thank God for that.
Well, they're just gearing up, yes.
We're going to have Fauci forever.
We need to have more
We need more Fauci. I haven't seen enough Fauci lately. You
know? Because he's an idiot, and people have interviewed
well,
him.
Well, he's been an idiot for a year. That slowed him down.
You even got... CNN had a column today that was sort of critical of Biden's policy, saying, well, wait a minute.
This is a little confusing.
It's confusing that Joe Biden says, on the one hand, the CDC, you need to do what the CDC tells us. The CDC tells us you don't have to wear a mask outside. You never did, actually, they now say, by the way. So why does Joe Biden keep wearing a mask outside? And he says, well, he's doing it because it's patriotic. Now, that should scare all of us, because you know what? That was true. Not that it's patriotic, but the truth there is, and he said it in that sentence, has nothing to do with science, has nothing to do with health, has everything to do with their social pressure to make us wear masks. And why do they want to do that? Well, they want to make us do a whole lot of other things. Same with the vaccine. The difference is where people were kind of willing to wear a, not even kind of, very willing to wear a mask, having somebody stick a needle in your arm and inject you with an experimental something or other that has had some negative effects, by the way.
People die.
And so.
One death. Is enough for, is one too many.
Exactly, unless, of course, it's a vaccine. So they're messaging, and they're starting to take a little bit of flack over this. Both, I mean, even Meghan McCain, right?
Even the crazy Meghan McCain.
Right.
Said the whole thing's a malarkey to her.
Right.
But I don't know if Joe, probably getting so affixed to his mask, he can't do without it. I mean, I think that may be a kind of a security blanket for him or something.
Well, and then they use completely conflicting things, like here in Colorado, where Governor Polis today said, no, you don't have to wear a mask inside. Number one, if you're 10 and under now, right? But you do have to wear a mask if you're in school. So let's think about that for a second. So wait, so if you're 10 and under, who are in school.
Why that just?
Well, exactly. If you don't have to wear a mask indoors, and then, I mean, it's just, they're making it up, right?
They're just making it up
as they go along. So, and again, and he gives no guidance, right? It's like if 80% of the people have been vaccinated.
And how you figure that out on any particular time?
I'm going to go with this. 80% of the people, wherever I go, have been vaccinated, so I no longer need to wear my mask.
Yeah, well, there you go.
There you go.
And here's somebody without a mask. We have our good friend Matt Arnold from Campaign.
The Unmasked Ranger.
Yeah.
It's the Unmasked Unranger, as it were.
That's right. So, Matt, the last time we had you on, you talked about a campaign finance disclosure complaint that you had filed against our beloved Tay Anderson, the Denver Public School Board member who raises money by doing things like tweeting his Target baby account, has GoFundMe pages to help raise money for health needs that he has that he never really justifies, et cetera. I mean, the guy's just a scam artist as far as I'm concerned. And Jenna...
That is the right kind of...
Yeah, I think the term is grifter, isn't it?
And of course, so our nonpartisan Secretary of State Jenna Griswold said, "I am going to look at this and give it every due consideration and get back to you." Right? Is that what happened?
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit more complex than that, and it's one of the weaknesses in the law, because basically what they're arguing, and it's interesting. There's already been there's been more coverage about their motion to dismiss than it was about the actual complaint,
which
motion to dismiss does not address the merits. They're basically punting and saying we have no jurisdiction here, which I think is arguable because the way the law is written, because this doesn't involve contributions to his candidate committee. They're saying, well, no, it's not us. Yes, he has to file this report. Yes, he has to file this on the Secretary of State's website. Yes, it's related to elections and his status as a candidate and a public official. But it's not us. Don't look at us. We're not the ones who enforce this. That's essentially what they're arguing.
But do they say who doesn't?
Yeah, but who, if they don't, who does?
Well, and again, this is a weakness in the law. I think, and I argued, and this is why, you know, Campaign Integrity Watchdog pursued a parallel path with this. CIW filed the complaint with the Secretary of State and also filed the complaint with the Denver District Attorney's Office. The CIW's theory is that we have concurrent jurisdiction, and Chuck, you know what that's all about. Basically, that they're two different authorities that have jurisdiction over part of the violations of law that are at issue here. And the theory would be that the district attorney would prosecute the criminal violations, because it is a criminal violation as well, and the Secretary of State would prosecute the civil violations and assess the fines and penalties. The Secretary of State position appears to be, oh no, we don't touch this at all, even though this is a disclosure that is related to campaign finance and election and status as an elected official, because this has a criminal component and it's not strictly speaking under the campaign finance section of the statute, which is CRS 1-45 and that whole chain of subsections, that they don't have any authority and they don't have any ability to enforce it. That's essentially what they're arguing. I countered and I filed a response this morning saying, well, I don't think that theory is necessarily correct, because part of that law talks about, I mean, there's a specific reference to this particular disclosure in the campaign finance laws.
Right.
Under 145.109, which is about, specifies, you know, what needs to be filed, where it needs to be filed, when it needs to be filed, and that's all under the Secretary of State's office. This particular form is supposed to be, it's a report of gifts, honoraria, and other benefits to the candidate or the committee, has to be filed with the Secretary of State. So again, logically, because these are things that fall under the Secretary of State should be the one to look into this. But their argument is, oh no, it's not us. Look elsewhere.
Should we ask them whether it'd be applicable if they were a Republican? Would they then have jurisdiction?
Well, and you can look at a couple of cases where, you know, that it sure looks that way. I mean, you know, last spring, someone filed a complaint against former Deputy Secretary Suzanne Steyer. Now, I think that the complaint was actually legit, but it took almost a year to wind through the system. The Secretary of State originally, the minions there, originally said, oh, we should dismiss this complaint. It went back up to the very partisan deputy secretary, who said, oh no, we're going to pursue this because Republican, and it's election year, and this is a hotly contested race in a swing district in suburban Arapahoe County. So, oh yeah, guns blazing, we're going for it. The ALJ actually went to an ALJ, wonder of wonders. The ALJ actually followed the Constitution. He actually followed the constitutional process. He actually came to a judgment. He actually issued a final agency decision. And then yet again, the highly partisan Secretary of State said, oh, no, that's not enough. And oh, by the way, Secretary or ALJ, you are actually referencing the Constitution. No, we can't have that. We need you to reference our rules and the law that we had our pet legislators pass ratifying our rules to put it under our power. And then the deputy secretary said, well, I will decide under my own authority, my own right. Feelings, basically, about what I think is just, and I'll impose a penalty and I'll issue the order. It is a grossly unconstitutional process. It robs people, and either way you want to argue it, it robs people of substantive and procedural due process and takes away from people the right to actually have a hearing in front of an impartial judge and both sides to present their case, go at it in our adversarial system of law, and then have an impartial judge make a judgment based on the law and what's argued.
Is that ruling now been brought back to some kind of court?
No, they basically just said we're imposing the penalty.
That's it.
And Steyer is basically, I think she actually had to cough it up.
Let me ask you this. One of the things, and let's get back to why we do all of this in the first place, because I think what Tay Anderson is doing is he is a grifter, but he's clever about it. The whole reason we have these campaign disclosure laws and the regulations and things is so people can see who's donating to whose political campaign, so then they can see if there's a conflict of interest. Let's say that I'm running for city council in Denver, say, and a bunch of developers are giving all kinds of money to my campaign, and then I vote to okay the rule, the zoning changes for their development, right? That's something that people should know about. We need to know about that. What Tay Anderson is doing, I think, is trying to skirt around that by just directly raising money through GoFundMe, through his other weird stuff, by just linking to baby registries. I mean, I could set up a Nordstrom account, maybe I should do this, and link to my Twitter account. Hey, anybody wants to buy, there's this cool pair of, you know, Prada shoes that I really feel I need.
Well, see, and the thing is, you as a private citizen have every right to do that.
Right.
As a public official, using your public official platform, basically putting this out to your public official electorate and getting big contributions from both private parties and organizations that have a real stake in the outcome of whatever policy decisions you're making, that becomes a corrupt quid pro quo, which is the entire point of all these disclosures.
So you've also, in your parallel track, filed it with the district attorney. Some people wonder where the AG could do it, but the AG does not have jurisdiction.
Does not have original jurisdiction, no. It's interesting. You know, we went through this a few years ago with corrupt former Secretary of State Wayne Williams, so-called Republican. And it went to a similar complaint against him, went to a grand jury. The grand jury decided to indict, and then Beth McCann, district attorney, stepped in and yanked it away from the grand jury after they had already said, yep, indict the SOB. They didn't say SOB, but they pretty much were saying that in the subtext. And she yanked it away from, which I've never heard of that ever happening, that once a grand jury makes a decision to indict, that the DA steps in and yanks it away from the grand jury. I didn't even think that was possible.
It happened in the Ramsey case, right? The Ramsey grand jury. I mean, they fiddled with the vote a little bit, so I don't remember that. But, you know, I believe the Ramsey grand jury voted to indict on child abuse, and the district attorney declined the process. Man, there's some comments going on the site.
So yeah, I see that. I've been trying to answer some of these as they're going.
I know.
So basically, a lot of the questions have to do with what is the proper jurisdiction. And some folks are talking about, well, shouldn't this be under Denver Municipal? No. Denver Municipal only deals with elections and candidates for Denver Municipal City Government Office. School board is outside of that. So the school board falls under the jurisdiction of the Secretary of State. For example, all of Tay Anderson's campaign finance filings were filed with the Secretary of State. So all of those you can go on the Secretary of State's website, Tracer, and find all of his candidate committee filings. They're under the Secretary of State. They're just saying, well, but those are all under Title 45, or Title 1, Section 45, right? Elections and campaign finance. So that is properly under the jurisdiction of the Secretary of State. Where the Secretary of State is making the argument is saying, well, this is under a separate statute, 24-4-203, or 24-6-203, which is basically it's kind of the Sunshine Act. And they're saying, well, because that's a criminal statute, that falls outside of our jurisdiction, and it's not strictly speaking under campaign finance law. Again, strictly speaking, kind of, sort of, except that the report that is required to be filed is A, required to be filed with the Secretary of State's office, and B, is expressly referenced in that campaign finance law, 145-109-3, which says that these reports are within the scope of what has to be filed.
So if Beth McCann refuses to
let's go that gambling app and bet on that
and so then it'd be a law that's a law that there is no remedy for. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, and then no one's supposed to enforce.
You have to report all these gifts,
it's totally unenforceable. Well, if Beth McCann punts, then she's basically saying we have no law here. If that's what happens. I hope that's not the case. Again, there are some good people at the professional level, you know, one or two levels below Beth McCann, who are very professional, I think they do their due diligence and they'll come to the right decision. They were the ones that came to the right decision to refer the complaint against Wayne Williams to the grand jury before political appointee Beth McCann stepped in and yanked it away from them.
Right.
So it is possible that political candidate Beth McCann may make a political decision, which I believe would be contrary to law. Again, the law is very clear. It states very expressly, if the candidate willfully fails to file these required reports, then that person is guilty.
Right.
It's not could be considered guilty, might be guilty, arguably, maybe sort of. No, is guilty and shall be penalized according to the law. So, again, I don't think there's really that much prosecutorial discretion here. I think that they have to do their investigation. They'll have to determine whether or not the violation was willful because there is a mens rea element here. But
Wait a minute. We all have heard about Tay Anderson's All the Gifts or his brand new baby. And you haven't filed anything on that. Are you planning to file something under that?
I'm looking into it. Again, that would be an additional violation that would fall under the same category. That would have to be filed in these reports of gifts. That would be a gift,
right?
To an elected official, which by law must be disclosed. Again, he can ask. That's fine. You know, and gullible people, bless them, they can give candidates this money to defray their personal expenses.
Well, the problem probably
but it has to be disclosed. And it's also subject to some limits because, again, there's this whole issue of undue influence and attempts to curry favor with elected officials.
Well, Progress Now is not just some innocent Karen over in what was called Stapleton. $2,500 is not a small amount of money that would be
Tay Anderson. No, I mean, let's keep that in mind, too. Exactly. And like I said, to me, what's alarming about all of this is the whole point of these laws is so that we can know who's donating to our candidates. And then you can kind of keep an eye on what kind of decisions are the candidates making regarding things that those donors are involved in. Like you said, Progress Now gets Tay Anderson elected. They donate this. You got to wonder why.
And Progress Now, they push policy, right? They push their preferred policy. And this, I mean, $2,500, you know, pretty soon you're talking real money. This influences policy decisions. This is the entire point of why we have these disclosure laws. So we know who is trying to buy favor and influence our elected officials.
And I think people are pretty used to seeing, okay, like you say, you go on Tracer and things like that. But again, you've got all these new sources where people are raising money. And Tay Anderson, you know, he wants to go to Washington, D.C. to see Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He opens a GoFundMe page and gets donations, right? He falls and hits his head, he says. So he opens a GoFundMe page, collects tens of thousands of dollars for that. Some of these gifts, if you go to his online target registry, I mean, they were expensive baby gifts. And you got to wonder, is it gullible people giving this money to him? Or is it just somebody who likes Tay Anderson, or is it somebody who wants to curry favor? And if he doesn't report it, we don't have any way of knowing.
That's right. And you know, it's very clear that at least some, I mean, at Progress Now, Colorado didn't give to Tay Anderson because they like his face. They gave to Tay Anderson because they want him to do what they want him to do.
Right.
That's why they give the money. It is currying favor. It is influencing. It is basically, you might as well put, you know, like race car drivers, put the Progress Now logo on himself and let people know who he really works for. Because he doesn't work for the people of the district. He works for the people who are buying him.
Well, and he flat out says, I'm going to be the next mayor of Denver. I mean,
and you can give me lots of gifts then, too.
Social influencer friend Arash Masala was on talking about how Tay Anderson, Denver Public School Board member, started intervening in some neighborhood Zoom informational meeting about a homeless camp in Park Hill and introduced himself there as the next mayor of Denver 2023. So, I mean, Tay Anderson, I mean, it's easy to kind of go, oh my God. But on the other hand, the guy has public ambition. Somebody's funding him. And the fact that the Secretary of State, and I'm just going to go on a limb here and guess the district attorney say, hey, it's cool that he can just raise all this money, collect all this money, and he doesn't have to report it. That's bad news, I think, for democracy.
I think it completely eviscerates democracy. A lot of the folks, liberals, are saying, oh, democracy dies in darkness. We need to have information. Except that when we don't, because it's our favorite guy who is getting all this money under the table. I think the rules should apply equally across the board. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. And when you have these kind of, clearly, at least on its face, it sure looks an awful lot like a corrupt quid pro quo, then the voters are in fact entitled to know about it.
Right. Well, you're at least filing the thing has brought this practice at least out in the open.
Right.
And so people have been, if most of the coverage has been on the side of what the Secretary of State decided not to follow.
They talked about it, and there are a couple articles that came out over the weekend. I was in the middle of an all day final Friday, so I didn't catch it until this morning actually. But Michael Roberts of Westword is one of the very few actual journalists left in the state. Ran what I think is it's a pretty balanced article about it, and basically just informational. This is what's happening. I sent him an update about the response and the fact that I don't think it was common knowledge that. There's a parallel complaint filed with the district attorney's office, and it's a criminal matter. Right. And so, it's still an open case. It's under investigation. Their process is going to be a bit longer and a bit less, public. But again, I am hopeful they'll do the right thing and do their investigation and prosecute him. And, he is subject to both criminal and civil penalties.
And maybe they could look into the sex assault allegations while they were at it, too. Yeah. If they bring him in there, then you can say, what about that?
I think 10 years ago, he said, we'll just have to open the people, do the right thing, and a lot of professional people and all that in these governmental agencies.
Well, where there's heat, there's light, right? So, and that's part of the point of getting this out in the news. People need to be flooding the Denver District Attorney's office saying, hey, do your damn job. Prosecute this lawbreaker, hold him accountable to breaking the law, and bring him to justice. And if you're unwilling to do that, then resign because you're not doing your job.
How widespread, Matt, just a couple more questions because we're coming up to the end of the show. But Tay Anderson's a pretty high profile guy, and his accounts have gotten a lot of high because he has a big Twitter following, et cetera, et cetera. But is this going on with other candidates, do you suppose, too, and other elected officials?
Oh, I'm quite sure. Again, I hate to kind of harken back to our old not buddy Wayne Williams, but he was getting a lot of business for his law firm on the side while he was Secretary of State. Some of his clients had business that was impacted by decisions that the Secretary of State made. My understanding is, and again, my sources tell me there is an ongoing investigation into things that happened under the Wayne Williams administration with regard to ethics violations. And, there are journalists looking into that. It has not yet been disclosed. And again, that's one of the problems with these things is all this stuff happens in darkness. There are side deals and backroom deals and whatnot made to keep this stuff hushed up. But, these are serious violations. And this kind of unethical quid pro quo and backhand dealing, I'll give your side business, little business here, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. There's something coming up in front of your office. Boy, it'd be nice if you would take a personal look at it there, Secretary Williams or Griswold or whoever happens to be filling the extremely partisan shoes of this supposedly nonpartisan office these days.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting cases for the IEC,
the Independent Ethics Committee
was a board member or a city council member up in northern Colorado who has got a couple months to live, dying of cancer. And so they asked him, can we set up some to help pay for some of those medical expenses? And the laws that apply to municipal elected officials are different than Tay Anderson. And they just said, we won't consider it right now. We'll get back to you in a couple months. You know, isn't that
which is a moot point, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing world, and it's getting more amazing all the time.
But Matt, hey, thank you, Campaign Integrity Watchdog. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for keeping us updated. And I think we'll stay on this.
Yeah, let us know what happens with Beth McCann, who we're all hoping will do the right thing.
Well, you know, and again, it's going to come down to: are people going to put the pressure on and insist that the DA does the right thing? If they do, there is actually a chance that something may happen. But if they don't, hey, to harken back to that old hacking phrase, democracy dies in darkness. And right now we have the Secretary of State's office, which is basically clouding our elections and our campaign finance in darkness by covering up these, I think, very serious violations of law.
Well, keep up the good work. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Matt Arnold there. All right. Campaign Integrity Watchdog. Check out that out. Hey, and this is from Jacob. He said when he worked for the Denver City Clerk's Office, he audited school board candidates' campaign finance reports. And I think, yeah, the problem here was there was no campaign finance report. That's not.
Well, there are. And I'll post a link to it on the Secretary of State's website. It's just there. I mean, both his current candidate committee is open for the 2023 elections. And this is the candidate committee that made these, you know, that had these violations. So go check it out.
Thank you very much.
It should have been reported, but it was not. And it should have been reported to the Secretary of State, not to the city and county of Denver.
They're cutting us off.
Thank you, Robert Spencer. Thank you to the guys at BBS.
Thank Thomas. Give us a few seconds more.
All right.
We appreciate it.
We'll see you Wednesday.